What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
A Bitcoin Core contributor, Jimmy Song, caught the Bitcoin bug back in 2011 and has contributed to Bitcoin open source projects since 2013. He's a contributor to various written publications and has a popular Bitcoin blog. He's the author of Programming Bitcoin, co-author of the Little Bitcoin Book, both seminal in very different ways, host of the new wonderful podcast Bitcoin Fixes This, developer, entrepreneur, professor, and all-around voice of reason. Jimmy Song, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. We're so excited to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me. That was a very lovely introduction.
Yeah, man, this is amazing. I'm really psyched to talk to you. You know, so you're very influential on, you know, my understanding or coming to grips with Bitcoin. And I think of you, and I was revisiting your work, because I've kept up with your stuff since 2017, for the most part. And there's so much to cover. But when I was revisiting your work, there were a couple of things that really stood out to me, maybe because of who I am, but, you know, that one, you're an educator. Mm. And two, you're a goal setter. You achieve goals. And, you know, you contributed to Bitcoin Core. And I think about those three things, and we can get into why those things kind of stick out to me. But my question to you is, you know, like Bitcoin Core, you know, Bitcoin changes you as an expression. You can't change Bitcoin. It changes you. And I was thinking about that and its relation to you and your work that you've put out. And when you speak, I kind of hear like Bitcoin Core. I kind of hear like the voice from the inside. It was even striking to me how you alliterate your articles and your writing. And I wonder, like, you know, how did Bitcoin change you? And do you think working on Bitcoin Core changed you differently than maybe people who learn about Bitcoin from a very different lens? And, you know, and maybe because, like, I think, well, maybe Bitcoin's changing me from the outside in, but maybe Bitcoin changed you from the inside out. And I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say that Bitcoin has changed me in a lot of ways, but it's part of, I think, just coming into maturity, just as a man. And Bitcoin was a part of that process. You know, I'm 44 years old, and you know, when I started this journey, I was what, like 35 or something like that. So, you know, I have kids and everything, and part of sort of coming to terms with having a family and, you know, trying to provide for my family and things like that brought certain questions to my mind, especially after 2008, about, you know, how am I going to prep for their future and things like that? Because it was clear to me after 2008 that this system was extremely fragile. And when I saw Bitcoin, when I found out about it, I think it really struck a chord with me in large part because of what I was kind of looking for, which was a good place to park my money, actually, right. Like to like invest and put something towards the future. And that sort of low time preference, you know, high, you know, like long term time orientation kind of view. That's what really struck me about Bitcoin. And that's something that has been developed in me as a result of Bitcoin. Not the least of which is Bitcoin itself. Like I put out a tweet the other day. I used to love shopping for bargains, right? Like I go to all the websites for the bargain deals and stuff like that. And I feel awesome when I get something like $100 less than what everyone else paid for it or whatever. I mean, I used to do like the crazy rebate games and stuff like that and get things for free and, you know, sell them on Craigslist afterwards and, you know, just all kinds of stupid crap like that. I'm realizing most of that is stupid because in a sense, when you have Bitcoin, which stores value really well, you're not going to go and buy needless crap because in a sense, like, if you just wait a little longer, you're going to get something much better and you're going to get it for a much better price, because in terms of Bitcoin, those things are all going down.
Right.
So I would say that the main way in which Bitcoin's changed me is a part of just sort of like coming into maturity, part of who I'm becoming. And that's just having a lower time preference, thinking much more about the long term and things like that.
Do you think with your background as a programmer that you maybe looked at yourself a little, you know, more introspectively and were able to reprogram yourself very quickly, you know, and to kind of take on, like, you know, there's a big difference between, you know, I'm not going to go and buy that thing, but I want it, versus like, I no longer want that thing. I I'm coming from more of a first principle and inside out.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, it's a little bit of both, right? Like I learned to be pretty introspective as a programmer. Like that's just something you have to analyze things. And it's, you know, a lot of people don't believe me when I say this about being a programmer. It's actually very emotional, especially when like a project you've been working on for, you know, 24/7 for 3 months, like gets cut, and then you have to like, you know, come to terms with the fact that you worked on something that no one's going to use or whatever. Or, you know, you work on something and a lot more people like it, like even though it took you 5 minutes, like that was like a critical thing for them or something like that. There's a lot of that. So, you know, like sort of internal emotional management aspect of it is something that I did have at least a little bit of through my experience in programming. But I would be lying if I said that I had really good like self-control. And, you know, I was, you know, at the same place I am now, like 9 years ago, that just wasn't the case. The thing that that changed with Bitcoin was that, you know, I started to recognize what it really meant to save and what it really meant to be able to put off till later, you know, like sort of, you know, let some things go instead of wanting it now. I've always sort of been a little bit that way anyway, you know, with the exception of a few things. But, you know, like this really sort of like encouraged it and like put the better angel of my nature in charge rather than, you know, the devil of wanting things now. And I would say that, you know, those two sort of worked in sync, and you know, I've been able to save a lot more, you know, recently because of you know, sort of the things that I've developed as a result of being in Bitcoin.
Right. You know, we're around the same age, and I think that kind of gives us a similar, you know, not a lot of similarities. I'm not to be strong, but similar life trajectory in the sense that, you know, we came to Bitcoin a little older, and we had a career maybe before we came to Bitcoin. You know, and I wonder, you know, how much were you always cool, calm, and collected? I find Bitcoin gives me a lot of zen. I see you. I think of you as very zenful. Was it before or after Bitcoin? Were you always cool, calm, and collected?
I would say not. Actually, like, my temper comes out sometimes. And, you know, you can ask my kids or you could ask people on Tone Stream that I did like last week on the election. Like there are times I just go off on people or whatever. But I would say that like there is a sense in which I've learned to moderate some of my emotions, I guess. But that's more a result of, I guess, like getting more attention on Twitter and so on and less Bitcoin. That's just something I learned as a result of, you know, like 2013, nobody knew who I was, but I was on Twitter and I was tweeting about Bitcoin and, you know, I'd get like 3 likes and people would argue with me and I'd get really angry and I would, you know, say nasty things and all kinds of stuff like that. In a sense, like going through those like early was a real blessing because I learned to recognize, okay, most people won't change their mind on a public forum in any way, shape, or form. And second, like, you know, you can let them win a little. It's okay, right? Like if somebody gets the last word in, like, let them get that little win and you'll be, you know, like, it's not going to hurt you any. You may think it does, but it doesn't. Most people aren't going to see those comments. And the very few people that do are going to think less of the person that made those comments than, you know, than the response that you gave or whatever. So I think that definitely affected me more in that direction. Although I don't rule out the possibility that Bitcoin has had something to do with that aspect as well. Certainly, like, having to speak a lot and you know, talk on podcasts and things like that, I think for me were a bigger influence.
Sure. What about the change in, you know, direction of your career, going from, you know, kind of being a coder, programmer, to maybe something more passionate, something you're more passionate about?
Yeah, that's something that now that I'm sort of, you know, I'm not beholden to a company, I really wish I did earlier. And it actually took me a while. You know, I think it was 2017, middle of 2017, when I really decided, okay, you know what, I'm going to go off on my own and instead of working for a company. Because, you know, even for the 4 years between like 2013 and 2017, yeah, I was working for Bitcoin companies, which is great because I get to work on Bitcoin related stuff. But it was, you know, like, not that satisfying because I wasn't working on like what I wanted to. And that's, and it took me, I think, like a month and a half of just getting up the gumption to go do it, right? To go off on my own and say, all right, you know what, I'm going to give this thing a shot and I might fall on my face, but I'll always have a programming career to come back to. So might as well give it a shot. And soon as I started it and, you know, I found some success doing that, I was just like, why didn't I do this 10 years ago? Because I was just like, because, you know, one of the things that I recognized was like my opinions in large ways were beholden to my company, the company that I was working for, and in subtle ways and in more overt ways. But like my mind wasn't my own when I was working for them. You know, like the golden handcuffs of salary are like, they consume your soul in some ways, right? Like, and the ability to sort of detach from that, to have my own voice and to say whatever the hell I feel like, and you know, like just sort of have my own thing going, that was enormously freeing. And you're probably right. That's definitely had an effect on my perspective and maybe how I come across and things like that. Because, you know, you go to a conference and you listen to a speaker that's shilling their latest altcoin or whatever. And then you hear somebody like Tone Bay speak, you know, it's a completely different experience because one is obviously working for somebody and they're, you know, it's like they're being sycophants to whoever is giving them the money. But, you know, when you tell the truth with sort of like the conviction of real belief, it makes a big difference and it comes across a different way and you have a different impact on people. And I think maybe that's the main thing that I've gotten out of sort of going off on my own into this, you know, Bitcoin entrepreneur journey.
Yeah, I really want to touch on this middle of 2017. My first question there is, you know, how much do you think going from, you know, that beholden point where you work for someone else to being your kind of freer person. And then at that moment in time, does your voice get more clear and chiseled, or are you literally just releasing thoughts that have been pent up? You know, I think that there's like a fork in the road that you almost can't have certain thoughts until you've left those binds. Obviously, maybe
that's an excellent way to put it. Like it really was kind of like that where it was, there's kind of like a barrier or some you're like you can't express yourself fully because you're tied in golden handcuffs or something, right? Like, and you don't have that freedom of movement, the freedom of thought, and you could kind of see this in my writing too. Like in 2017, you know, the first half of 2017, I was trying to be conciliatory to all sides and trying to, you know, like, calm people down and try to, like, you know, thread the needle in between and say, hey, you know what, I'm this neutral person and everything else. And you could see in the second half of 2017, I started getting my own voice and saying, instead of writing what people wanted to hear, I started writing what I really thought. And that made all of the difference because, you know, like, people want to know what it is that you think for the reasons that you think it, instead of whatever the company line may be or whatever might make them feel better. As much as people like things that make them feel better, it's not, you know, it doesn't connect at the level that real truth does. So I think that was the main thing. Now, was it like a lot of pent up stuff? I think to a degree, like, a large part of my career, I didn't like, it's kind of like water you're swimming in. You don't really recognize that your opinions are beheld that way, and that you're being moderate because you're sort of put into a political position at your workplace that you didn't sign up for, but you nevertheless have to play. It wasn't like that as it was like. Being free from that, my mind could now go wherever it wanted. And, you know, I always have thought of myself as somebody that sought truth. And, like, that's where it led me. And that's ultimately, I think, what led me to write a lot of those things that I did. And yeah, it seemed to connect really well with Bitcoin Twitter and so on.
Yeah. What do you think you would want for your children then? In terms of a career or vocation, or, you know, is it like you're going to hand them a couple of Bitcoin and be like, go do what you want to do? Is it going to be like, I'm going to buy a car wash and I'll give you 10% equity and $60,000 a year to work there for me and work your way through the equity ladder? I mean, how do you kind of instill that stuff to your kids, I guess?
Yeah, that's something that I've been thinking about for a long time. The best thing that I've come up with is just sort of, give them the tools to succeed and then see what they want to do, and don't let sort of fear get in the way of their trying things. Because, like, to me, the hardest hurdle to overcome, the month and a half where I was just sort of like pondering whether or not I should go off on my own, it was getting over that fear. And it kind of sounds silly right now that it took me a month and a half to get over that fear, but that's what it took. It was just literally like every night just thinking, oh, okay, like if I do this, okay, like, and you know, I made like lists and said, okay, here are the pros, here are the cons, here's the worst case scenario, here's blah, blah, blah. And ultimately it was just kind of like, at some point you have to move, you have to do something, you have to take a step. And after I took that step, it was like, what the hell was I worried about? It was like navigating the free market and finding a product that other people will find interesting and will pay for isn't like this crazy difficult thing that they make it out to be. And, you know, they're like... I've been absolutely shocked at some of the things that I've been able to sell people. And you know, oftentimes they'll come to me and ask me for it. And I was like, hey, I didn't even know this was something that you'd want, but okay, I've done it for you. Now let's go do it for like 30 other people. And then you make a bunch of money. So in a sense, that's the mentality that I would love to instill in my kids and give them that sense that, you know, like, the world's your oyster, and it's not something to be afraid of. You just need to know certain you need to have certain skills to be able to navigate it, but you don't need to be beholden to a company, because I like, in many ways, like, that would probably be one of the worst outcomes that I can imagine, which is that, you know, they go to a company and sort of live out their existence in quiet desperation, to quote Thoreau or whatever, you know, like that would be like the worst possibility for me. I would want them to live and take risks and break things and try something and fail, you know, like that's when you actually learn things. And Yeah, I got to tell you, I failed in a bunch of things since middle of 2017. I've tried a bunch of things. I was like, yeah, you know what, that's not going to work. And I was able to fail quickly and learn from it. And other things, I was like, hey, this works, or it works for a certain amount of time. And you know, that's what I would like to instill, is that sense of entrepreneurship, of risk taking, of this mandate to actually add something to the world. Not by doing what someone tells you, but by using your own mind and creativity and, you know, like skills to find some piece of the market that needs something that you can fulfill, something like that.
Yeah. You know, I wonder like where you encourage them to spend their time. Like, do you want them to be programmers and coders? That seems like a way in my mind for people to be Bitcoin cash flow positive, you know, as sovereign, not cash flow positive, Bitcoin cash flow sovereign, or something like, you know, being a voice. But that's really hard to do without a skill set or a background or experiences to fall on. You know, it's hard to, you know, I don't want my kid to be a 20-year-old influencer on YouTube per se, even though he's dying to be one of these, you know, YouTube stars playing video games and making video games and showing people how to do it. Or making it entertaining for them, like his stars are of today, for him. Mm. But you know, what would you?
Yeah, I would say like programming is definitely useful, and there are all kinds of other skills that are just extremely useful. You know, like being able to, like put up a drywall, or you know, like you know, weld something. Those, sure. You know, fix a car. You know, all those things are just extremely useful skills. And you know, combining them in interesting ways and figuring out sort of holes in the market and like needs in the market that you can fulfill, that's really the main thing to teach for me, is that ability to find a need in the market that you can fulfill and then go do it and market it in a proper way so that you get some business. And that to me is like way more effective then, you know, learning sort of like a set skill. And like programming is kind of a pretty unique skill in that it can be fitted towards lots and lots of different things. But most jobs in the economy are not like that. They're very much sort of cookie cutter. And, you know, it's like, oh, we need an accountant and we need a lawyer and whatever. And all of those things have very specific credentials around them and things like that. I mean, which I get why they need to exist, but they're not, at least for me, that creative or that fulfilling or whatever. And my kids might think differently, and I'm open to, you know, seeing how they see the world. But, you know, to a degree, like to get the best match for your skills and passions and, you know, whatever makes money. Like to get that, to get the best fit for that, you need to go out on the market yourself and not like go into a cookie cutter, you know, sort of role that they, you know, ask for in the marketplace. So that would be my main, sure. Sort of lesson to teach them.
And you have a lot of lessons. You're an educator. It really comes through, and it's very effective. You had a blog post, I think it was probably in 2019, My Story of Setting Goals. And I think it's just one of these things that is just so simple, but it's so, in my view, very honest, because you're sharing your story and your achievements. And a lot of people are very selfish with those things. They don't want to share, you know, what they were thinking when and what they accomplished and the sauce, you know? And inspire others, maybe. So, you know, you wrote, you know, and you know, back in May of 2017, I had just broken 1,000 followers on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You know, now you got some over 180,000 followers on Twitter. You know, and you kind of outline here, like, I'm going to write some goals. And you wrote down some goals in 2017 when you had 1,000 followers, you know, and you wrote down, you know, I want to be at a keynote to a conference. Travel to 5 continents and do something Bitcoin related, create my own business and write a book. And you kind of put it on a 5-year horizon, which I think is fantastic. It's kind of what Pierre Richard talks about a little bit on the show, and kind of thinking humans thinking a little bit more longer term. And you bang these things out in 18 months.
Yeah. And that was an absolute shocker to me that I was able to do that in 18 months. If you want some tips on goal setting, there's a really cool Jordan Peterson goal setting workshop that I use to actually set those goals. And basically, he just asks you a bunch of questions and you answer them as honestly as possible. And that's how I came up with those goals. Did I think I would achieve them in 18 months? Absolutely not. I was going to be able to achieve them in 5 years? Absolutely not. But it came in large part because goals have that effect where you notice opportunities that fit your goals because you have them. Like because you're focused on the endpoint, you're able to see how opportunities that you might have now can fit towards those goals. And I think that's definitely what happened. And about 2 months after that, I went off on my own and started my own business, teaching programmers. Like a couple months after that, I got invited to my first conference, and lo and behold, they wanted me to keynote the morning the first day, right? Like I was the very first speaker on the first day of that conference, and it was a brand new conference. I was like, I haven't really spoken before, but okay. All right. This is what I wanted. So I ended up doing that. A few months after that, a month after that, a friend of mine approached me about writing a book together. And then, we explored things, and he wanted to drop out. So it ended up being me. And I ended up getting a contract with O'Reilly to write a book, not the Little Bitcoin book, but the Programming Bitcoin book. And that ended up happening. And I got invited to different conferences, and, I was like, okay, well, let's see where it is. And then, it ended up that I did travel 5 continents. And, all of those things happened because I was looking for those opportunities and I had some goals in mind. I think goal setting is absolutely crucial if you want to get some things done. And, I have different goals now, and we'll see how those come to pass. But the ability, I'm a big believer in how much the goals actually focus you towards them. And they almost sort of call out to you and draw you to them like magnets or something like that. Yeah, it's a worthwhile exercise to do, even if it's scary emotionally, which it is for most people.
That's what I was just going to ask. Was it hard for you to be honest with yourself? Because you talked, a lot of people listen to these workshops, the Jordan Peterson one included, and you talked about these magnets. You put the goal out there and it becomes this magnet. But I think it's hard for a lot of people to be honest with themselves.
To admit what they really want, right? Like that's... it's okay to want things. that's the big thing that I think a lot of people feel guilty about. It's like, well, I want fame and I want money and I want, these things. It's okay to want those things. Like if you're honest about it, that's okay. The thing I found is that oftentimes like your perspective on those very things changes as you go closer towards them and you might not want them anymore. Like, you mentioned your son wants to be a YouTube influencer showing people how to play video games and so on, because that's what he's watching right now. I bet you after he finds out what their lives are really like in a few years, his perspective will change and say, oh, you know what? That maybe that's not for me. And, you have to play video games like 14 hours a day to get really good at it in order to be able to show it. And you have to have really good video skills and speaking skills. And I've tried public speaking and I'm not very good at it, blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of those kinds of things that can kind of correct your path. And you might not want those things anymore, at which point you can reset your goals. I feel like when I set those goals, I was old enough to at least know myself enough to know that those were like, within reach, right? Within 5 years. Those were things that I could do that were concrete, that weren't sort of abstract, not knowing ever whether I've ever made them, actually reach those goals or not. But yeah, it, like the actual like desire is okay to have. And that's something that you have to kind of give yourself permission to have and say, okay, well, all right, it's okay for me to want this in 5 years. I might change it. You always leave yourself the out that, hey, that's not what I want. And, you know, like I'm okay with not achieving that particular goal and I can go do something else. That, and yeah, that it, I guess that has to do with something like your perception of yourself versus who you really are. Because a lot of people want to be somebody that like that they're not, or they perceive themselves to be somebody that they're not. And, you know, being honest with yourself is hard for that reason. And, you know, this is where, you know, having, you know, a spouse can be really, really helpful, and certainly was for me. And, you know, like being like having her tell me like her perspective of me definitely changed, you know, like my perspective of me, and that helped me to set clearer goals and, you know, be more honest with myself and so on.
Yeah, probably the only thing more important in life than finding Bitcoin is probably finding a partner for life. For sure.
I agree.
So, you know, you've probably taught thousands and tens of thousands of programmers and developers, primarily focused on Bitcoin. You know, what have you learned from teaching all these developers?
Like in my course that I used to run, I've taught over 600 people, something like that. And the main thing that I learned is that people can learn really fast if they're motivated. So I learned something about education, because like, you know, if you read my book, it's like a semester's worth of information. And like, and I literally taught it over a semester at the University of Texas. So I know it can take a long time if you want it to. But I did these seminars in 2 days, and it was 8 hours a day, 2 days. And these people are paying me a lot of money, so they're very motivated to learn. And amazingly, they got almost all of it in 2 days, which was kind of amazing to me that they could. But that's the power of human effort, and that's the power of desire and things like that. And I look at like the education system today, and I'm like, this is completely broken. Because if these people can learn in 2 days, what took me really like a couple of years, like it's the education system is what is wrong. They're not properly motivated, or they're not, you know, it's not presented the right way or whatever. There's plenty of really smart people that can get things really, really quickly. And I'm sure you know of like coding boot camps and things like that. It's like 6 weeks, and then they come out of it paid six figures at like a pretty decent company. Like that's like sort of the path that they're on. And 6 weeks of training is all they need to get to that point where they can do something like that. So yeah, like that's the first thing that I learned, is that people are very willing to learn if they are motivated to do so. The other thing that I learned is that there's a lot of people that get motivated by other people. So, you know, I have pretty much the same material in my book, and you can definitely work through it. The typical, you know, length of time it takes for somebody to actually work through the entire book with all of the exercises and everything is a few months. But I'm able to do this in 2 days. Part of it is me pushing them, you know, like just, I'm going to go fast and you better keep up. Otherwise, you're not going to get value out of it. But the other part of it is that, you know, they're sort of like what I would call the CrossFit effect, which is that if you've ever been in CrossFit, just the fact that somebody next to you is doing like reps that you're not doing makes you feel terrible. And that motivates you to do the reps, even if you don't feel like it. And that's sort of the dynamic in a classroom that I realized that really work in everyone's favor, is that when you have competition and sort of like this sense of like keeping up and so on, it can be a very powerful force for learning. So those would be the two things that I'd say I learned about.
Sure. What kind of people self-select into, you know, a programming for Bitcoin course? And are they programmers of other sorts? Or are they just people who are coming at Bitcoin fresh and want a way in?
Yeah. So I had a very I had a lot of different types of students. So I've had, you know, like the people that I expected were professional programmers that wanted to know about Bitcoin so they could get a job in the Bitcoin industry. So I certainly got some of those. I also got programmers that were sent by companies because they wanted to have some sort of strategy for Bitcoin or blockchain or whatever, and they sent them to my course. And all right, I'll teach them. And then they went back. I also had a bunch of Bitcoin holders that knew a little bit about programming that wanted to learn more about the protocol so they could learn more about their investment. And, you know, I had, you know, like college students, and I had like octogenarians. Like I had people all over the spectrum. I actually had a few high school students. In fact, I had a 14-year-old girl that won a scholarship. So pretty smart girl that managed to, you know, take the course and keep up with the rest of the class, which absolutely shocked me. But that, like, it was a whole variety of people, and they all had different motivations. And this is something that, you know, sort of as a small business person, like, that you need to realize is that, you know, the market's going to come from places that you do not expect. And it's very important that you pay attention to those things, because if you do, then you'll be able to, you know, better serve the market and be able to make more money.
Some of your students have gone on to, you know, do amazing things in the Bitcoin space. Do you ever pick up something very quickly about students, you know, as you're teaching them, you know, maybe sense who's picking it up or who's getting it? And this question is kind of phrased in two ways. You know, how much of coding and, you know, whether someone's in your course, and how much of it is art versus science? Or a combination, and some people are better at one or the other. Like I could write code and get what you need done, versus you know, maybe Satoshi wasn't, and I'm trying to paraphrase your word, the best coder ever. But you know, if you look at all the ideas that were kind of intertwined and the multidisciplinary background to pull all this together, you would think that the art is unreal.
Yeah, as far as like identifying my students, you can always tell as an educator something about the student by the quality of the questions that they ask. So once in a while, you'll just see a student that's asking these like very precise questions, and you're like, okay, that person is going places. Like, if they're asking that, that means they know all of this other stuff. And they have a grasp of it that's even better than mine or something like that. So there's certainly those sort of like one-off geniuses that you encounter in class and so on. And every educator has met them. And you can always tell usually by the quality of the questions. But there are also others that are more silent and introverted, and they get it, but you never identify it until much later. And that I usually find out by, you know, what happens afterwards, like what companies that they get hired by and so on. I think I have students at pretty much every major Bitcoin company that exists. So it wouldn't, you know, like they clearly know something and can do things that, you know, like I didn't identify while I was teaching them. But yeah, there is a lot of that. I would say that the creativity, the art of it comes from understanding. I think Satoshi could have written a better client if Satoshi had more programming experience. It's just, but you know, the fact that Satoshi got so much of it right is actually more impressive than the parts that he got wrong. Because you know, those are sort of the mistakes that you would expect somebody that wasn't quite as familiar with sort of what you would call enterprise-grade, you know, level coding or open source level coding that that you expect from like the bigger projects and so on. So I think they're both like very related, and it's great to see when, you know, I don't know, I call them my kids too, but yeah, when your kids do something really cool.
Yeah, you know, I I listened to a lot of what you spoke about, you know, let's call them shit coins or altcoins and the bets you've made. And one thing that, you know, you said throughout that conversations that I've heard that, that kind of struck me is like, you know, you don't, you're not really looking to deify Satoshi. I thought that was really interesting and grounding. But I'm wondering, you know, like I don't want to use that word, Satoshi, leaving the project, is that sort of like on a deification level, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely one of the more unexpected, things about Bitcoin that like people still sort of mythologize about is, well, Satoshi's anonymity and disappearance. But definitely there's something about that disappearance that was purposeful that actually ended up changing the ecosystem quite a bit because it decentralized it from Satoshi. Satoshi was no longer the point person to make all the decisions or whatever. Instead, it became a decentralized project. And nothing else comes close to doing anything like that. And that was a key thing, I think. And anyone that's also that's observed this space kind of knows what that really means is that, you know, this is not a normal kind of person that would just that would do something like that, because it takes a lot of selflessness, and none of those coins have moved, and there's a lot of them. And you know, we know that Satoshi was a cypherpunk, so there's little to no chance that the keys aren't backed up and so on.
Right.
But there's a significant amount of, you know, I guess, virtue inherent in Satoshi to be able to do that. Now, like some people say, like, oh, he got arrested or whatever, and now he's sitting in prison, and it's you know, that's why it happened. Dead. And I don't know, that might be true. What I can say is that the current state of affairs, what has happened has worked out for the best of Bitcoin. So yeah, that, and I think that's worthy of some consideration in Satoshi's favor.
Yeah. So, you know, 2020, we've been through a bunch of Bitcoin cycles, a few, to be a little more specific. You know, and I think you're one of the few sane Bitcoin OGs, you know, still grounded and still very focused on Bitcoin.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think there's plenty of people in the Bitcoin core development world that that came in before me that that are still around, that are doing a lot of good things. What I have noticed is that a lot of the non-technical OGs, almost all of them have more or less left Bitcoin for something else, usually an altcoin, and completely burned their reputations on them, which is kind of sad. I think the one OG that's not like that is maybe Max Keiser and Stacy Herbert, but that's about it.
Wow. Do you think there's something to that, you know, in terms of being able to make money, you know, or counterfeit money, or that power that they've sensed and are and you know, maybe metaphor grabbing the throne, or you know?
Yeah, I think it is something like that. But if you come at the king, you best not miss, right? Like that's more or less what they've all tried to do. Is they a lot of the non-technical OGs came in to Bitcoin from sort of an investment standpoint, not as sort of like changing the story of the store of value or something like that. They instead came in thinking, oh, this is a good investment. I picked the winner. I'm going to be able to pick other winners. And they get kind of an ego about it. And I think that's where their downfall is in that, in thinking that they're bigger than Bitcoin itself. And we've seen this happen over and over and over again with all of these you know, would-be saviors that are creating their own coin and saying, you know what, like, this is the new thing, and we're going to be Facebook to Bitcoin's MySpace, and, you know, Bitcoin is the Model T, and I'm a Lamborghini, and all that other, you know, which, these are all, like, arguments by analogy and so on. Ultimately, they believed that they can do better than Satoshi did. And that's the fatal flaw, I think, to a large degree. Because, like I said, the biggest thing that Satoshi did was leave and like sort mm-hmm. of, yeah, give up the throne, if you will. And that's not something these guys are willing to do. So, yeah, in that sense, like it's a sad commentary on their motivations. And yeah, they kind of end up there because they, I don't know, like, if you're an investor and you make a lot of money, you're going to have an ego. That's just the fact, because that's how you score. That's how you keep score in that world. For a technical person, it's not quite like that. You keep score a different way, so you're not as susceptible to that particular thing. So I suspect that's why programmers haven't been as susceptible to that as sort of non-technical OGs have.
Right. Yeah, I like how you kind of swept a lot of that argument away, or that civil war with, you know, hard forks are great. It proves Bitcoin's a voluntary system, and you're free to go. And I think that just kind of like summed that up for me very nicely, and I like that a lot. And so I kind of want to turn to, you know, what do you think is going on in 2020?
Well, 2020 has been a crazy year. I don't need to tell any of your listeners that. But like from a Bitcoin standpoint, Bitcoin crashed with the market and then it recovered way faster. And the market's been recovering really fast. So it's even faster than that. So it's been kind of a crazy year. I would say the halving was the big sort of event that happened in May, and that was something that everyone anticipated, but the supply shock that came as a result of that hasn't really worked itself through the market until about now. It's starting to be felt, right? Like you can see the price rising and so on. So that's definitely something that's happening. Will it continue down this road, and how will it end? I'm not really sure, but I mean, it does seem like there's less of a supply of Bitcoin and a heck of a lot of demand, and we know once it gets to be a frenzy, it can go up really fast. So that's what I'm anticipating, is from a store of value standpoint, a lot more people are going to be adopting it.
Yeah, you made some predictions on Twitter for 2020. He said Bitcoin dominance will be 75% at the end of the year. We're edging towards that. Taproot will be activated out without much controversy. I think that kind of sounds like a slam dunk. Bitcoin price will have a bottom to top difference of at least 100%, where we got that in multiples. And halving will be the big narrative. Do you have any predictions for 2021?
Well, I was wrong on the first two, I think. It's at 65%, and I didn't anticipate all of these DeFi coins coming in, and they diluted the dominance index significantly because there were just so many of them. And then Taproot looks like won't be activated until next year. So I think I was wrong about that. I expected it to be activated this year, which it definitely won't be. 2021, I'm expecting Taproot to get activated. I suspect that wallets will have a little bit of a hard time implementing all of the goodies that come out of Taproot, Schnorr signatures, aggregated multi-sig and mu-sig and things like that. Those are not that simple. Let's just say that from a technical standpoint. And there's a lot of gotchas, a lot of wallet developers, they do put in a lot of time into their product, but they're also putting in a lot of time into like altcoins and things like that. If you want to adopt Schnorr and things, you're going to really need to focus on Schnorr and not be developing altcoin number 95 or whatever into your product. I see some tension around wallets and Schnorr and adoption and things like that. But I think the industry will be adopting it. It's just a matter of time. Other things, I see the uncertainty kind of continuing from 2020. I know that's probably not what a lot of people want to hear, but that's that seems to be the case right now. Is there is a lot of uncertainty around elections and COVID and things like that. If anything, this seems to be, I hate this phrase, but like the new normal, right? Mm. Like we're in a constant, and in a sense, all of that is actually kind of good for Bitcoin, because it's like the one thing that looks much more stable than everything else. And, right. And in my opinion, it is more stable than everything else, in a different kind of way. So that's, those would be it. As for the rest of the world, who knows?
How do you think the new normal is affecting us? And how's it affecting your kids?
Well, thankfully, they're going to school, like actually physically going to school, mm. not just over Zoom. So they're having a little bit of a more normal time sure. than I think other kids are. But oh man, I mean, like I'm married, so it's not as bad, and I have kids, so I get to hang out with them or whatever. But like if I were a single person, like living in a major city, I can't imagine how different life would be for me right now, because you can't, right. like there's just nowhere to go out, and like it's hard to meet people, and like people are all scared and everything else. And you know, if you're young, if you're in college or something like that, then you know, like the campus experience is just completely changed. If you're in high school, your school experience is very different. Even the people coming out of college, they're coming into a work environment that's just completely different than what anyone else has had in the past 30 years. So, yeah, I like the social impact of what's happened is something that's going to be felt for a pretty long time. And a lot of it's going to be permanent, because, you know, like, what is it? Google, Twitter, Facebook, they're all like letting their employees like work remotely for at least a year and so on. You know, that's definitely going to become more normal. There's probably a lot of other things happening, and who knows what other virus might, you know, spark the public imagination in the next 18 months. So all of that is to say, like, there's a definite shift in mentality, among the populace. So I expect that to have some downstream second order effects, at least.
Sure. You have traveled and lived in a lot of places. You could live anywhere. Why Texas? Should I move to Texas? I'm visiting in a week and a half for Gary Leland's Dallas Bitblock Boom barbecue. I'm so excited.
Texas is awesome. I like first thing, if you're a U.S. citizen, is no state income tax. So that's a major one. If you make any money at all, then you know, like, as opposed to like California, which can be upwards of 10% or whatever, just in state income taxes, that's a big deal. So that's one thing. It's also like a culture of more, you know, free and libertarian thinking, I think, which I like, which is very different than the coast, which tend to be a lot more nanny state-ish. I'd rather have my freedom. It's a very good sort of like, cost of living versus what you can make ratio, which is kind of what you want. Like, you know, San Francisco, you can make a lot of money, but it also costs you like an arm and a leg to live there. Right. Kansas City is a very nice place to live, but you don't have that many jobs that pay that well. So you want some combination of both. At least for me, Texas fits the bill.
Right on. Where do you see yourself in 20, 21 years, Jimmy? You're 64, you're 65, are you riding your bicycle in the south of France with your wife? Like, what's going on?
Hopefully I have lots and lots of grandkids, and I'm helping them, helping my kids raise my grandkids a little bit. Probably, you know, taking vacations with my family to different parts of the world that we think are interesting. Hopefully doing something with Bitcoin that that I can leave a legacy with, rather than just living for myself. Something to that effect. Also, like, still working out and powerlifting and going climbing and things like that, so I can keep up with my grandkids.
Nice. This has been awesome, Jimmy. I really appreciate it. I've enjoyed this chat tremendously. I'll leave it to you. Any parting words?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. I can be found on Twitter and on Medium and GitHub. I'm also working on a book. It's basically a Christian argument for Bitcoin, which I hope to release in the next couple of months. I've been writing it with 7 other people, and we're finalizing it now. So that would be it.
Yeah, well, the books have been amazing. The Little Bitcoin book and Programming Bitcoin. I give the Little Bitcoin book to everybody. I buy them by the dozen. I love it. I really appreciate it, man. This has been dope. I hope we can have you on sometime soon. Thank you so much, Jimmy.
Thank you.
Peace. Jimmy Song, professing his love for life, family, and Bitcoin right here on the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And thank you for listening. If you dig the chats, vote with those thumbs and press 5 stars in that app. That's the best way to get the pod out so we can keep grinding out thought-provoking conversations about Bitcoin. This is said. Peace out.